Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Island Issues is sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at King Shops and on Ali'i Drive. And you may hear Island Issues here on the radio, Sundays, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. And the podcasts of most of the Island Issues are online. Lava1053.com and KoaCountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Today we have two guests, Jeff Melrose, the author of the Hawaii State Agriculture Land Use Study that he did in conjunction with University of Hawaii at Hilo, plus Scott Enright, he's chair of the Hawaii State Department of Agriculture, to ask him why he commissioned the study and what he plans to do with it. Last week we had part one of our conversation with Jeff Melrose, and that is at the podcast site if you want to check that out. And now let's continue our conversation with Jeff Melrose. Jeff, you were the author of the 2012 Hawaii Island Food Self-Sustainability Study. Can you make a comparison between what you saw on Hawaii Island in the 2012 study compared to what you saw in this study, which may have a slightly different focus but still looks at the same area?
You know, I think that in the 3 years since, there's no dramatic shift, really. There are small areas that, you know, I know went in or went out of crop. On the Hamakua coast, particularly the South Hilo, North Hilo coast, where you have sweet potatoes, wherever you map them, they're not there next because they're only there for a year, and then they move on looking for virgin land, which is not the best agricultural scenario, but it is the way sweet potatoes and sweet potato growers are operating. And you look at the 1980 numbers to now, there's a substantial increase in coffee, particularly in the Kona coast. You can see very clearly on the maps the difference in the amount of coverage of coffee here. But we did go back and redigitize, and we had even a better approach to the digitizing from the last time, so our numbers are a little different and a little tighter. But generally speaking, things don't change that dramatically in the agriculture world. There's certainly more coffee in the Kau area as people have continued to plant Kau coffee, but that's about it.
Pasture land. You have talked about pasture land. What does that bring to our state or not bring to our state? Why is it important or not?
Well, you know, ranchers manage 80% of the agricultural cropland in use today. They are the default manager of most agricultural lands. And I've always just been very impressed with my time around the ranching community. Their sense of commitment both to animal health and animal safety, as well as to the sustainability of grass and the art of growing grass and keeping grass, are really important. But as a beef industry, that industry has gone through lots of ups and downs in pricing. In the 1970s, virtually all cattle that we had in the state stayed in the state. We ate it all. And when he talked to Pono Von Holt at Pono Holo Ranch, he said that was maybe 30% of the total consumption of beef at that point in time, when all of our cattle stayed here. We're shipping off probably 75% of it today, maybe more, primarily because the price is better on the mainland. And you don't have to keep an animal on grass that's drying up. You can move them around. You can keep a different level of pounding on the pastures and in dry periods particularly. Most of what we harvest locally today is still cull cows and bulls, which is primarily a ground beef kind of a marketplace. But there is an increasing number of players who are bringing the grass-fed business here, Parker Ranch and their Paniolo Cattle Company, Kuiwi Ranch in Kau, and a number of other partners with them, producing a quality local beef product. The challenge there is keeping the quality grass available for the last 6 months of their life time, so that the meat itself is as good and marketable as it can be. It just takes a couple of people buying a grass-fed steak that doesn't taste, that chews, then we'll buy it again. But the cattle industry is a big part of our agricultural resource management in the state, and I think we're in good hands for the most part, as far as I can tell from those folks, and I think we're lucky that there are people and there is an industry that keeps those lands open. Because if it's not in cattle, it'll be in albizia or runaway guinea grass or something else that catch fires and runs. So land management is not an option.
Land management is a tough thing, and when you talk about the cattle and the desire to have good grass-fed beef, of course, that does come back to the water issue as well, and the fact that now we're in a drought, at least on this island. Can't speak to the other islands, but that's a problem.
It is a problem, and what you'll see, you know, finding some way to irrigate pasture lands is key, and the Hamakua ditch has actually been priced now so that ranchers can irrigate those fields. I think it's being done on a test basis more than anything else right now. But for the last 6 or 8 months, there's been plenty of grass. There's no lack of it. Now we're going to have to start to deal with that. And that's part of the problem, is that these rain cycles and our initiative to address these issues don't always run in the same cycle. But anyway, I think that irrigating and connecting up to a slaughterhouse, as Big Island Beef has been doing, that will help put a quality product on the table is important. And Parker Ranch is actually probably going to end up shipping a fair amount of their cattle to Oahu to be fattened, partly because there's capacity at the slaughterhouse on Oahu. That's a publicly owned, out in Barbers Point, leased but publicly owned. It's underutilized, and it would be a place where they could move cattle. So they've been partnering with Kualoa Ranch and a number of others to help move animals onto that island near the end of their life, and then harvesting them on Oahu.
Do they have a feedlot on Oahu, or they do eat the grass before they get killed?
Yeah, we used to have a feedlot on Oahu. That's where all of the feeding was done, there in Hamakua, and Maui had one. But the cost of importing that grain is now beyond the benefit to the meat producer. So, yeah, there's no longer a feedlot there. So they will try to keep them on good grass, I guess is the point.
Dairies. Last we talked, the only dairies in the state were on this island. There was talk of putting a dairy on Kauai, but what's the status there?
Last I heard, they're still trying to put the dairy in Poipu, and I think they're doing some kind of environmental work to do that. It's a tricky one, though. There really is no processing facility on Kauai, so that being able to process milk within 72 hours of it coming out of the cow means you have to ship it off to process it in Oahu. And Metal Gold is owned by Dean Foods in Texas, and they're not your stay-at-home mom kind of company anymore that they still market themselves as. But I think that there's some real issues in that packaging operation that you may find some investment in trying to compete with that or replace Metal Gold if they happen to go away. But the Big Island Dairy in Ōkala invested about $20 million in the last 3 years to really up its herd, to up its feeding, its production per cow, etc. So there's really a state-of-the-art operation there. They're invested for the long term here. And I'd sure hate to think that we were going to chase them out because they grew a GMO corn or for whatever the reason is. Agriculture is not always the best neighbor, but it is absolutely an important part of what the neighborhood needs.
Well, I don't want to get into a discussion of GMOs, but I know that that's something that has allowed farmers to create more production, which as our population increases is something that's actually pretty important to create more food, yeah?
Well, it's true in some crops, not all of which or very few of which have any role here in Hawaii. So outside of the kind of pioneering work of Dr. Gonzalez and Columbia University and others who helped us through the papaya problem, there aren't a lot of GMO crops that we're using here. We are a testing ground for them. We're creating seed for those businesses, but we're not applying them. Now, they're doing some testing on bunchy top, and can you insert a gene into a banana that would produce, that would avoid a bunchy top disease? These are big, important issues for farmers. Otherwise, they will simply go by the way of the Edsel. I mean, people are going to disappear because, oh, you can't get over these hills.
Which brings us to who's doing the farming. Farming is a very tough gig, as we've talked before. It's manual labor. It's hard work. Who is doing the farming now, and who will do the farming in the future?
You know, that's a really interesting question. We spend a lot of time trying to think about how do we get a new generation of farmer. If the average age of a farmer in Hawaii is 58 or 60 or whatever the number is currently, there's very much a need to create new farmers. So there are multiple programs, Go Farm out of the University of Hawaii, and CTAR, Koala Center has one up in Kohala. The thing that strikes me, though, as I walk around the state looking at agriculture, is that the bulk of the people who are doing farming, who are actually engaged in it, are immigrant farmers in the first and second generation immigrant. I don't see them also represented in some of our farmer training and development programs. So it just strikes me that we need to be more attentive to who's actually farming today and look at how we can help that group build their leadership capacity, build their technical capacity to continue to grow. And you'll see it here, you know, in Kona, with the number of, you know, Spanish folks coming here to assist in the coffee harvest, and then periodically individuals staying on to manage the farm and being part of this. These are really important people to us, and they know how to interact with that immigrant group. They know how to help train it. They can speak both languages. They can engage in this conversation. But Hawaii has always had an immigrant labor base back into the 1860s.
That's who did all the work on the plantations, is it not?
Exactly. But when you think about it, and the number of people in the papaya industry, the macnut industry, the coffee industry, there are certainly in there some good local people making a difference, and there are an awful lot of immigrant folks who are doing the work. Building that capacity, I think, is one of our most significant things we need to focus on to make sure we have people who are willing to farm.
How's that going to happen, Jeff? How is the capacity going to be built?
It's a good question. I'm not sure that I have a good answer. The Department of Ag had a program called the LIFE program, Local and Indigenous Farmer Education Program. And it was funded for some years, but it actually brought out interpreters with our CTAR extension agents, that they were, the interpreters could develop these relationships with immigrants. In some portions of that immigrant population, there's a lot of skepticism about government and government people, and you know, they were kind of trained in another culture about that. So building up trust is a key issue. But being able to have people who are engaged in that trust building and then being the vector for the education and training for everything from pesticide use to farm advocacy, which I think we could use some more voices in throughout. So going back to those, funding those programs and keeping people aware and focused on that immigrant group, I think is just one of the pieces we haven't gotten a full swing at yet.
You've spent a lot of time talking with farmers in the course of not just this study, but the study you did 3 years ago. And I look at farmers on this island. Are you seeing their offspring want to go into farming, the next generation?
You know, that's a tough one. I hear as many stories about kids not wanting to continue on. And there are also some good young farmers on the Hamakua Coast. There are some, you know, Max Bowman and a whole series of them. These are hardworking people, and they're really interested in this new scenario of providing food for people. There's a lot of passion, and there's an entire generation of folks who grew up with the word sustainability, and that was kind of a new word to us by the time we got to 30 and 40, but now they're brought up with it, and they have a real passion for it. And I think that, you know, some of it is also part-time versus full-time. A lot of the coffee industry is built on part-time employment. And can you operate an orchard type of an operation on a part-time basis, which is a lot easier than going out and planting and replanting and building soil and the like in a diversified ag world? There are a lot of university folks coming out with degrees, but they probably more likely end up in agencies than in farms. So I think I don't really know where that's going to happen from. I don't have that silver bullet, but I do know there are a variety of efforts that are building people's capacity to farm, and whether they take advantage of that and actually turn it into commercial ag, or they just turn it into their backyards and become better providers of their neighborhood with the things they grow, both have certain values, certain benefits.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues. I'm Sherry Bracken. We're here every Sunday on the radio, 6:30 a.m. Koa Country, 107.7 FM, 8 a.m. Lava 105.3 FM. Today, we're in part two of our conversation with Jeff Melrose about the State of Hawaii Agriculture Land Use Study. You may hear the podcast with part one of our conversation at lava1053.com or at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. We're talking with Jeff, but we're also going to be talking a little bit later this morning with Scott Enright, Chair of the Department of Agriculture. Next Sunday, join me for a conversation with Rana Rego Rizzuto, who I've had as a guest before, and this is a rebroadcast of our previous conversation about her writing. Rego is conducting a writer's workshop here on Hawaii Island April 4 through 9, or one day, Friday, April 8th, at Kalani Retreat in Pahoa. The detail on that is at pelesfire.com. But hear from Reiko, and it'll give you a sense of what you might be able to glean from her at this writer's workshop. Now, back to our conversation with Jeff Melrose. I want to ask you what the next steps are, but before I do that, are there other things about this work, the statewide agricultural land use baseline 2015, that you want to comment on, other things we should talk about? Because it's a big study. It's got a lot of stuff in here.
Well, you know, I think, you know, we touched on a lot of the key pieces of this. We talked on water. We talked on labor. We talked on land ownership. I think the gravity of the market gravity is a big issue. What areas are going to open up and what is their economic production capacity that will draw market from other places? So I think we've covered pretty much across the board.
You know, people talk about the ability to produce enough food here in the state to serve the people in the state, 1.4 million people, plus tourists, which is a lot of people. Is that even possible?
Well, I think if we were willing to go back to a very simple diet, it'd be more practical, more probable. I think that our expectations, I often think that this is not a production question, it's a consumption question. It's us. You know, we're the ones who are going into the store and wanting an apple in the middle of the winter or an orange or something that doesn't grow then. And, you know, the boutique items that we like to eat, the things that we are now watching the food channel on a regular basis and appreciating and wanting those things, I think all of that changes. So if we were different in terms of our consumption, this would be different. These are really market kinds of issues. And there is a demand for good local food. I get it. A lot of it's based in restaurants and the like. But there's an awful lot of people who are just struggling to make a living in Hawaii. You have a whole earth tribe that has certain kinds of expectations and talks in certain languages. And you have a Walmart tribe who's also trying to make a living and survive in this environment. And I think that these conversations can be very tribal in their nature. There are some people who can't stop talking about it and the other ones who haven't even thought to think about it. But it becomes political fodder, and we say we're going to double the number of local food production. This is the new governor's goal. But the truth is we don't collect data. We don't collect the data that's necessary to know whether you're doing better or worse. We laid off 25 enumerators in 2007 and have virtually no ongoing data source that tells us whether we are or aren't getting any better at this. Our study will tell you where we are and kind of at the scale of acres by general category where we are. And you can think through that a little bit and try to understand what kind of production that really means for us, but it doesn't tell us how much cabbage, how much lettuce, how much carrot. And the Department of Ag does have another study that is contracted with funds from the Ulupono Initiative to look at food metrics and come up with a method for tracking food. But it still takes a commitment to gather metrics, to gather data.
And well, when you say track food, what do you mean exactly? Because I do know what you mean about the state having stopped collecting data, because when I've been trying to do some news reporting, I couldn't find out how much coffee, how much whatever there was, and I was sort of surprised that we weren't doing that.
Well, aside from what the National Ag Statistics Service, NAS, produces on every 5 years ag census and a series of crop-by-crop annual surveys, these are survey instruments that they use. And they get at it, but I don't think they are necessarily this whole system. Their whole system is built around commodity tracking across the U.S. People bet the futures of grains based on the NAS reports. Here, because we're a small producer, that same instrument is a little bit more of a blunt force to try and get to the details of what's being collected. We used to go out and count containers of things and know what was inside them at Young Brothers, and there were people down at the harbor collecting these numbers. Today, for the most part, things end up in just-in-time delivery in the back of a supermarket with lots of different kinds of things in it, and there's just no way to get in and ask that. There are some data sources that I think are and should be used more actively, and the SKU data, it's a shopping unit, but whenever you scan something across the scanner, they record what it is. Those are very protected by the individual grocery stores, but you can buy that data some years back, but you can understand what's being used. They do break it down by local and the like. So there are ways to get at this data, and you have to get it from a variety of places to make it work, but we could be tracking it more actively.
Well, and what I was told by Department of Ag is that some growers are just not interested in sharing their information because they feel that's their competitive information. They don't want to, for example, if there's only two growers who grow a particular product, grower one doesn't want anybody to know how much he grows because that makes him a target.
Yeah, that's very true. And Larry Jeffs, who is the largest farmer in the state, Sugarland Farms, in the central plain of Oahu and a bit on Molokai, He'll tell you he produces a pound of food for every resident of the state of Hawaii every 6 days. And that's an easy number. He knows how many pounds he shipped out, and he knows how many people live here. But he doesn't fill out those forms for that same reason, for the very same reason. He's just too large. You know where he is. NASA data is very clear about not giving area-by-area data, which is one of the things that's different about this report, is that we do have acreage numbers by area instead of rolled up into a statewide number. We can get a feel for them in different places. We can see them visually in certain places. And I think that helps to lead us in a direction of a better knowing, but it's well short of knowing everything we'd like to know.
So what is State Department of Agriculture going to do with this study now that it exists? Where do we go next with this?
That's largely in the hands of Director Enright, Scott Enright, who has been a big advocate of this process.
And I'd like to mention is from Hawaii Island.
Oh, absolutely.
And
he's
really
an Apollo resident
and
still lives there.
Yeah, and he really liked your 2012 baseline study.
Right, which is why we're doing this one.
Right.
And he's been a big advocate of this throughout. And I think it's a tool to inform and educate. And as I go around the state talking about this, I think people do walk away with a little bit different understanding about it and a more informed context, because otherwise, we really are just holding on to the ear of the elephant or the trunk of the elephant and thinking we understand the overall piece. But they are committed, and the governor is committed, to some increased production. And I think that will come. There are just so many different places and so many forces pulling on it. And the Department of Agriculture, what does Scott say, you know, it's 1/3 of 1% of the state's budget or something like that. It's a, you know, lots of expectations about it, but very little actual funds thrown at it. So there's a limit to what they can do. But I do think that informing and shaping a better discussion is a key to whatever you do next.
Jeff Melrose, thank you so much for sharing all your mana'o about this. I find it totally fascinating to be able to look at what is really happening in our state. Is there anything you'd like to add before we say aloha?
No, just thank you. And I thank the Department of Agriculture for their good work and for the University of Hawaii's support of this project, University of Hawaii at Hilo and the SDAV Lab. As always, Sherry, a pleasure to sit with you and chat. You are one of the best question, answer, and digger in persons in the state, and it's a pleasure to sit and talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that you still wanted to come when you call me the best question digger inner. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Aloha.
Thank you.
And now for our listeners, since Jeff did remind us that the use of this study is completely in the hands of the State Department of Agriculture, I wanted to ask someone from State Department of Agriculture what their intent is. So I picked up the phone and I called Scott Enright. He is the chair of the State Department of Agriculture. Here's my conversation with Scott Enright, with whom, by the way, I'll be doing a full Island Issues conversation with in a couple of weeks. So if you have questions or topics to suggest for that, send them along, info@lava105.com. And now I'm speaking with Scott Enright. Scott Enright was appointed the chair of the State Department of Agriculture by Governor Neil Abercrombie. Governor David Ige asked him to stay on, and he agreed to, which actually for us on Hawaii Island is a great thing because Scott Enright lived and continues to live here on Hawaii Island. Good morning. Aloha, Scott.
Aloha, Sherry.
Scott, thank you so much for talking with us. We've just heard a summary of the new statewide agriculture land use study summarized by Jeff Melrose, who is the primary author. And I just want to ask you a few questions about it, starting with, why did you commission the statewide agriculture land use study?
Governor Ige has asked the Hawaii Department of Agriculture to help move forward the agricultural community to double what Jeff and I would call local fresh fruits, vegetables, livestock. But the Hawaii Department of Agriculture hasn't done any of the work for the planning tools necessary to move us forward. We don't have any of the milestones, the benchmarks that we would need, the metrics we need to move that forward. And so commissioning Jeff to do that land use study, it's an excellent study, is a planning tool that we'll use to move that effort forward.
Scott, do you know at this point, I know that Jeff has just completed it, but do you know how you actually plan to use this study?
Well, you know, the first use that the department will have, and certainly that I'll have, is with food safety. The federal government, for the first time since the 1930s, is moving forward with the Food Safety Modernization Act, FSMA. And that is going to drive agriculture into food safety, which means all of the post-harvest work needs to hit federal regs. And with that, we'll need to put investments in for things like food hubs so that farmers can combine their efforts in doing their post-harvest work. And so Jeff's work shows us where agriculture is being done, what's being done there. It's going to help us identify where what we would call food hubs are, where we could put investments into post-harvest facilities.
Interesting that you talk about the federal regulations, because I know we ran into this last year when we were talking about the new food safety regulations and how they might impact those social service agencies which feed low-income or homeless people, because oftentimes those agencies are not really set up like commercial restaurants, but the new regulations really want them to be. So interesting, they affect the Department of Ag and food production as well.
Yes. You know, in another 3 weeks, I'll be on the mainland for a week working with the FDA on how to implement the food safety rules.
Scott, what's your initial thinking on one of the goals of this, which is how to increase agricultural production? Again, I know it's brand new. Has anything popped into your mind on that?
Well, you know, Jeff's work, along with the University of Hawaii of Hilo's Geography Department, their excellent study they've done, show us where the opportunities are. So the Hawaii Department of Agriculture can't force an industry forward, but we can demonstrate opportunity. We can model opportunity. The planning tool that Jeff has handed off to us is showing where certain types of agriculture, say papaya on the Big Island, is flourishing. And then we can look to see where we can work with that industry to move it forward with investment dollars. It's really about capturing the investment dollar that capitalizes moving an industry forward, and it assists us in doing that.
Scott, you've been involved with agriculture on this island and statewide for a long time. Is there anything in the study that surprised you in your initial looking at it?
The first thing that jumped out at me is how few acres we have in canoe crops like taro and bananas, and we know we can affect change there. You know, I knew those numbers were low. I didn't know they were that low. So that's one of the many things that jumped out at me.
I was actually surprised, but I suppose I shouldn't have been, at how many fewer acres we have devoted to agriculture than we had, say, 20 or 30 years ago. But when you think about the plantations and the demise of them, makes sense, huh?
No, exactly. And, you know, a lot of those acres are sitting out there fallow, and we could bring into agriculture, again, to the extent that we can model opportunity for investment dollars. Because, you know, it's agribusiness, and it's having it make sense, economic sense, for somebody to come in and do an agricultural enterprise.
Scott, anytime something like this is undertaken and has conclusions on which you might want to act, there's always the question of funding. Is the state willing to fund additional work to help make agriculture in this state more robust?
Governor Ige is committed to capitalizing, helping us fund the efforts of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. We'll put together compelling narratives to bring our friends along in the state ledge. So I think we can do that over the course of time, yes.
Great. Before we say aloha, Scott Enright, Chair of Department of Ag, anything else you want to add about this particular statewide agriculture land use study?
Again, it's a needed tool for moving agriculture forward. We hadn't taken a look at a number of these features in the study for over 20 years, some of them closer to 30. So it updates us. It's essential to have the planning tools to move ag forward, and this is one of the studies that we've commissioned to do that. Jeff Melrose and his team have done an excellent job. I appreciate the work.
Well, Jeff and the UH Hilo team, as you know, did a food sustainability baseline study for Hawaii County in 2012, and I thought that was one of the best studies I'd ever seen.
You know, it is a small state, and Jeff and I go back, and I'm aware of his history, and I knew that work as it came out. And we had been talking about the baseline study and the need for it. And so when I became chair, it was one of the first things that I commissioned to have done. So I again commend Jeff for good work.
Very good. Thank you so much, Scott Enright, Chair of State Department of Agriculture. Aloha.
Aloha.
And for our listeners, to let you know, I will be doing a full Island Issues with Scott Enright, Chair of Hawaii State Department of Ag, in a couple of weeks. So if you have questions or topics you'd like me to pursue with Scott, email me at info@lava105.com. I'm Sherry Bracken. This is Island Issues. Our guests today were Scott Enright and Jeff Melrose talking about the Hawaii State Agriculture Land Use Study. The complete land use study is online at the Hawaii State Department of Agriculture website, hdoa.hawaii.gov. Until next Sunday, please, let's all live and thrive with aloha. Ahui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.